Mid-afternoon, late autumn, bars of spangled light on the river. He was crossing the bridge on the pedestrian walkway, fluttering with flags when he'd first seen her, not knowing it was her. And the whimsical thought came to him, as such thoughts had often come to him when he'd been younger and had lived alone and walked a good deal by himself in urban places. I will marry her. That one. Except, of course, he was married now. He was long married by now. The brash young man who'd walked for hours in cities, tireless, curious, thrilled to be alone, sometimes taking photographs, but often to no purpose other than to walk on his quick, restless legs, had long departed. She had glanced around in that instant, as if he'd reached out to touch her, a leap of recognition between them, like a blade of light on water. Almost, he'd lifted his hand in greeting, but he didn't know the young woman, and he was sure she didn't know him. Afterward, he would claim that their eyes had met that first time, and she would say laughingly, "I don't think so. I think I would remember if that were so." He was drawn to the river, swift-flowing, ravenous waters rushing close beside buildings in this old riverside mill town. Le Fleuve Bleu, it had been once, at the time of the French settlement in the 1730s. Now, just Blue River. Yet strangely, by some logic a local historian might have explained, the small riverside city itself was still called Fleuve Bleu, pronounced in the flat nasal way of upstate New York, Fleuve Bleu. On the farther side of the Blue River was Fort Winston, Ontario. From the ceiling-high window of his office in the old brick Rutherford building on River Street, where he often sat dreaming, he could see massed trees on the Canadian shore less than a mile away, the bulky silhouette of the single-span bridge that linked Fleuve Bleu and Fort Cornwell, a stretch of waterfront, massive rusted oil drums, warehouses, trucking yards, docks, barges on the river moving with surprising swiftness in the churning water like rhinos. When he'd first come to work in this family-owned law firm, he'd brought a camera with him every day. He'd spend his lunch hour roaming the waterfront, taking photographs. He'd climb out onto the fire escape, taking photographs. Gradually, in recent years, he'd ceased bringing a camera to work, though something ached in him, a yearning, an emptiness, when he saw something, more often someone, he'd have liked to photograph. A distinctive face, a memorable gaze. As he thought it, a gaze to pierce the heart. It had come to seem an indulgence, his expensive cameras, about which his dear, kind wife never spoke, never reproachfully. And taking so much time, such exactitude, caring so much about images few people would ever see. Of course, his family and friends admired his photography. How could they not? He was one of theirs. More recently, since his 40th birthday, to resist the camera, to resist making costly prints of his work, this seemed to him a kind of virtue, a Tolstoyan virtue of negativity, not wasting money on photography, not approaching the young woman on the bridge with whom, in that first fatal instant, he was smitten. Fearless, she'd appeared to him at the bridge railing, leaning just a little too far over the railing as a reckless child might do. She was staring down at the water rushing 12 feet below the walkway, Le Fleuve Bleu, and so in fact the water appeared blue, dark cobalt blue, heaving and bucking and throwing up spray, chill droplets tossed by the wind so that pedestrians squealed with surprised laughter. Is it raining? No, not rain. It was a surprisingly warm November midday, a day to bask in sunshine. First, he'd seen her. Her back was to the walkway. A white skirt of some thin material like muslin billowed about her legs that were slender yet hard with muscle, crimped hair, dark red like sumac.